From ComicsExperience.com, you're listening to the Make Comics Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome into the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics, and normally that's through listener questions, but today we're doing things a little bit differently. My name is Joey Groh, and I am joining Andy Schmidt and a special guest. Andy, do you want to introduce our guest?
We are talking with Kyle Higgins, writer of Nightwing for a long time, and now is off doing a creator-owned book called Cowl at Image Comics. So we're talking with him about sort of the difference between creator-owned and work-for-hire work. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. One of the reasons that we wanted to have you on here was because, first of all, Cowl looks really good, which you know, but also because there is a connection with me, as I'll be editing the series with you.
Yeah, those two things are not related either.
Not related.
No. I am actively working to make sure it looks worse.
yes.
The role of an editor, I hear.
All right. Yeah, and I'm trying to make you do more gimmick covers, and all kinds of good stuff like that. But I did think it was, you know, one of the things that comes up, because now I've worked, you know, having worked at Marvel and at IDW on licensed books, and I've done some work on creator-owned books. It's a very different thing for me to be working on a creator-owned series, my role as an editor, than on work for hire. But it's very different as a writer, and I was kind of hoping you could get into that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, it's a little bit of a power reversal, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I feel diminished.
No. I mean, I don't look at it that way. I hope you don't. But I would understand if you did. I guess you know, I'm joking about that. But in some ways, it really is a little bit of a role reversal. In that the book, because it's a creator-owned property that, you know, the copyright is held with me. It's held with Alex Siegel and myself. At Image, and so. You know, it's really, the onus is on us to get the book out, and so when we, you know, go out to bring an editor on, it's kind of like we're all working together, but we weren't hired by the editor, you know what I mean, which is the traditional model in like a Marvel or DC or any sort of work for hire, is that the editor contracts out to the work for hire freelancers. In writing and art, and so it's really, the onus is on the editor to get the book out the door and, you know, a finished product that is as strong as can be, to get the most out of the creators that they're working with, and I think that part is still very much the case here. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm excited to work with you and why I talked to you about this project, you know, from the beginning. Is to have a collaborator and someone that is a fresh set of eyes, and also to help on the management side of it. And you know, I've never gotten a book to the printer. I don't know fully what that entails. You know, so it's really nice to work with someone who's done this a lot. You know, so between the three of us putting our heads together, and Rod, so the four of us, and Troy, we'll include Troy in that too. So the five of us. You know, hopefully we don't destroy too many lives, blow up too many things.
It might be good for listeners if you want to give a quick pitch on what the book is, either of you, if everybody's not familiar with Cowl.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, you know, Mad Men meets Batman concept. I've actually described it as like Jimmy Hoffa's Mad Men with superheroes. It stands for, the book Cowl stands for the Chicago Organized Workers League, and it's about the first superhero labor union in 1960s Chicago. So it's a little bit of a kind of a superhero noir, if you will, that deals with a lot of the politics and a lot of the politics of the era. Through the lens of, you know, the transition in comics terms from the Golden Age to the Silver Age of superheroes. So a lot of these characters who basically form this organization with the noblest of intentions back in 1949 and have a contract with the city, because their motto is that you can be better heroes for the city if that's your only focus. Their kind of purpose in the city of Chicago and in some ways in the world in general has changed over the last 10 years. And so now, as we're entering into this era where the country is beginning to lose its innocence, and this black and white world is no longer as black and white. The heroes themselves and what they stand for and what their motivations are starting to be very much reflective of the times, and that question of whether they can continue doing what they're doing and whether they should be doing what they're doing is something that we're exploring in the book. And of course, anytime you introduce money into something like this, there are all sorts of into like superhero work, there are all sorts of moral and ethical questions that come up, and that's really what started to interest Alec, who is my co-writer, co-creator on this, started to really interest Alec and I, Alec and me, on in about this world.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, the 60s thing is part of what interested me. I've been a noir fan for a long time. I worked on the Madrox series that wound up becoming X Factor with Peter David and Pablo Raimondi and all those guys. I've never shied away from that and sort of those detective sort of feel stories. I've always enjoyed that, and I enjoy the mixture of it with the superhero elements. But the look of the book is not like, we're not trying to go back and recreate a book from 1965. And I think that's worth talking a bit about Rod Rice's art as something that does manage to capture that tone and that feel, but it's a completely modern style and painted style and sensibility. It's really, really cool stuff. And that was a big draw. I mean, Kyle basically gave me that pitch of what the book was about. I was like, okay, I'm really interested in what that could be. And he and Alec and Rod were already on board together. And as soon as I saw Rod's art, I was like, well, this will be easy then. Yes, I'm in.
Well, and the cool thing about the visual aesthetic of it all is that the book takes place in the 60s, but in comic kind of history, comic terms, it looks more like a 1980s book. Like, Rod has a very kind of Bill Sienkiewicz kind of vibe to his stuff. And so it's fully painted, and some stuff is actually traditionally painted, but a lot of it's digitally painted, a lot of the pages. But yeah, we didn't want to do a book that was of the era. I didn't want to do something that felt like we were trying to make it a book that could have come out in the 60s. That wasn't as interesting to me. It's a lot more of a kind of a James Bond 1960s, if you will. So, the technology's a little more advanced. I think James Bond 60s is probably the best way to describe our world. So there are definitely like noir overtones, but obviously we're about 20 years removed from the height of noir and cinema anyway. So I guess it's probably not fair to classify it as a noir. It's a neo noir. Well, it's got neo noir overtones. There you go.
There you go. So getting back to kind of our topic, you had been working at DC for quite a while, doing work for hire, writing Nightwing and a few other things as well. Then you made the plunge, and you've already talked a little bit about, well, you're now responsible for the whole thing. It's not just writing a script and getting paid for it. Do you mind talking a little bit about how it's different sort of in your approach to a script or to a series? When it's somebody else's characters, that sort of thing, as opposed to your own, knowing that you're responsible for, the whole project, does that make you approach creatively Cowell differently from Nightwing and your other work?
Yeah, I would say it definitely has me thinking in bolder terms. I'm actively trying to do things in the book that push both my own storytelling sensibilities as well as kind of the boundaries of what I think we can do and what a book like this can be, or what people might think a book like this is going to be. I definitely find myself trying to do a lot more, trying to invert things a lot more and just trying to, you know, subvert expectations. And, you know, we want to do stuff that's interesting to us. And I say us, I mean Alec and myself. I think, you know, like a lot of the DC stuff, like Nightwing's my favorite character. He always will be. But anytime you're working in an environment with characters that you don't own and that you don't control, you don't have the final say. I mean, except for in very, very rare situations, or if you're a creator just with an immense level of power, very rarely do you have final say in anything with a character you don't own. And that's, you know, that's the way, I guess, you know, that's the way it should be. I mean, if you know, Nightwing is DC's, Batman is DC's. So they are the shepherds of those characters, and creatively it can be hard. And you know, I have definitely found myself with certain work for hire jobs where the direction of a book or a direction of storyline, I find myself kind of actively like coming up with things and creating stories that I think will get through the system, you know, and I. It's like, okay, well, this is kind of, I know they won't want me to, like, they won't want this, you know, so I'm not going to pitch that. So I'm going to steer this way and kind of give them what they want. And, you know, sometimes that can be creatively fulfilling and other times it's not. So with something like Powell, what's great is that we are able to tell the stories that we are passionate about and take the characters and storylines and directions that we think are interesting. So it's a lot more kind of creatively freeing and liberating. There's a lot more pressure, but I prefer that, you know. You know, and a lot of the other kind of hurdles too, like from a, you know, getting the book out, the overall kind of look and feel of it and the package and the design of, you know, from covers to the interior letters pages, to all that stuff. I mean, being able to have a hand in that is really, really cool. I mean, that's the stuff that I love. And whether it was, you know, from when I was, you know, when I'm making, you know, short films or, even just designing posters and stuff like that of my own stuff. Like, I've always had a very big hand in the look of the overall, you know, an overall property or project. And so, being able to now do that in comics is really fulfilling for me. And I wouldn't be able to unless it were a property that I owned.
And I think that's a really good point that you were talking about, all the aspects that you get to be involved in. And in some ways you kind of have to be, or, you know, the buck stops with you. Mm-hmm. I think folks that are just getting into comics sometimes don't realize that a lot of, you know, in your career, Andy's career, my career, you're it. You know, it's a small business that you're running. Yeah. And that has some of the more, like, I got to think about the accounting side in addition to approving covers, in addition to communicating with my editor, in addition to, oh yeah, the story, the plotting and the rest.
And I think there's definitely a place for work for hire. There's a place for writing the Marvel and DC characters for me. I mean, that's something I do still enjoy, you know. And I wouldn't be able to, if speaking totally honestly, I wouldn't be able to launch a book like Cowl, having not written a lot of the Batman books that I've written. You know, launching any sort of creator-owned book is a big risk. But launching one on the heels of, you know, writing Nightwing for 3 years and now, you know, Batman Beyond and now doing Batman Eternal stuff, I don't know that it makes it any less of a risk, but there's definitely, you know, my name is on stuff on the stands right now that people are reading. So, you hope that, you know, you're cultivating an audience doing that. And I don't know that launching a creator-owned superhero book, even a book that is as kind of subversive and different as Cowl is, it still has superheroes in it. So I don't know that launching a creator-owned book with superheroes would be feasible if I hadn't been, you know, kind of building my name through Batman the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I mean, as an editor that used to work for you know, Marvel doing pretty much all superhero books, like you're always looking for somebody that's got some heat behind them, which in order to have some heat behind you, you almost by definition have to have something on the stands, or at least very recently on the stands with your name on it that hopefully is getting some buzz. Your Nightwing run was very well liked. A lot of the other Batman work that you did, people really responded to. So, you know, and from my sort of standpoint for wishing the best for Cal, the fact that you're continuing to work on Batman Eternal and that sort of thing, I think that bodes well for Cal. You know, I'm hoping that the two feed off each other, and that people who pick up Cal who aren't as interested in, you know, maybe the DC superhero universe may read Cal and wind up really liking it and going, oh, I want to see what this guy can do on a Batman book, and may wind up picking up the stuff you're working on now. And it's interesting how the two actually do wind up feeding each other. The other thing I was gonna say is that Kyle's point about, you know, sort of pitching story ideas and stuff that to get through the system is you know, not you're not alone in that. You know, at Marvel, I used to see that all the time, and there tends to be this sort of trajectory of when you first get in, you've got a million ideas and you're going to change the way things work and you're going to tell stories that nobody's told before, and you're all amped and excited. You do that, and then you get them all shot down, and then you realize, oh, there's a system in place and there's a reason these things don't happen, and so there's this sort of learning curve, but it's a downside, I think, to a large degree, when people, the upside of people sort of pitching stuff they think has a really good shot at getting through. Nobody's pitching anything they don't think will be good. So it's not like you're just pitching something, and I know you know this, I'm just sort of clarifying, you know, for the audience, mm-hmm. but, you know, nobody's pitching anything they don't think is going to be good, but they're pitching stuff that's in this sort of, you know, narrow target zone that they think will get through and be good. And I remember, and I'm not the only editor who's done this, but I remember working with newer creators to Marvel, and working with them for a while fairly consistently, hitting a point where I would say, you know, pitch me the story you don't think is going to get through, and then really trying to find a way to make that story work. And I always enjoyed that. Now, I couldn't do that. I was working between myself and Tom, and, you know, whether it was Molly or Nicole or Aubrey or whomever else in the office, or usually three or four of us that worked in one office. As an editor, because you're working on all those 20 books, 20 books or so per month with not just myself, but, you know, with Nicole or Aubrey or Molly or whoever was in the office with Tom and myself at the time, between the three or four of you, you had to put 20 books out, and you couldn't take that tactic of let's push the envelope on every one of them. So you try and push, you know, a couple of them, and sort of foster something or try something new, especially if sales were not where you might want them to be. And then you let other books kind of run their course because they were doing something interesting already. But it's really very common once you get into these systems, and this is what happens with any system, is the system designs a way to navigate itself. And it happens sort of, it just happens, sort of a natural side effect of a system is it narrows the spectrum of what works within the system. So doing the creator-owned book, you have all this free reign that you may not even have been all that aware that you didn't have when you're navigating the system, because you're focused on the system, and now you have it, and now you know, conversations that we have, or you, me, and Alec have, you know, lead us to interesting places. Whether or not you choose to pursue them all or not is another matter. But the fact that we're open to them, I think, is really, really cool. And it's one of the things that I like about it.
You know, but you know, just to play devil's advocate, even to what you were just saying about pushing the envelope on things, I would actually say that even when I haven't been able to push the envelope on things, even when it's like, all right, I have to write the most down the middle story because that's what's being requested of me. I have actually found that I've gained more confidence as a writer doing that. The reason I say that is because I have been able to find something within the down the middle story, even if it's, you know, an emotional arc or you know, some sort of thematic kind of idea or statement I'm trying to make, that I've been able to make work and to get into the material while still giving my editors what they need to make the book sell, you know, or to make the book get through. And so it's helped me a lot in terms of feeling like, well, if I can do that, I can do anything. You know, if I can make that story work, you know, if I can make story X work that I didn't think there was any hope of being able to make work, well, then I kind of pretty much feel like I can kind of roll with anything and I can make it good, you know. Or if not, maybe not revolutionary, maybe not, you know, set the world on fire good, but I can make it a compelling read. And you know, all of that's it's just reps, you know, it's practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree wholeheartedly. And sometimes, you know, it's having those hurdles that help you improve, like knowing, okay, I can jump that hurdle, and then you're throwing another one. I can jump that. Now I know how to jump that. Like it, all of that helps improve and help builds confidence. We're actually beyond the time we thought we were going to go already. So we could wrap this up. I think, Joey, did you have anything else you wanted to ask before we go?
No, I think you guys did a really good job of summating and putting that kind of cherry on top of building the skills with Work for Hire to get to the point where you're able to plan your career own better, think about markets, think about story content.
If that's the way you want to go. I mean, that's the other thing too, is that like the way that I'm doing it, the way that I'm launching college, that's just one way to go. I mean, there are just as many creators who launch with a creator-owned book and really cultivate that audience from the beginning. And, you know, there's, you know, I look at that model sometimes too and think like, wow, there's a part of me that wishes I would have started by putting out, I wish I would not have taken this long to put out my own work. That's 100% me, you know? So it's just, that's just kind of the cards that I ended up, you know, being dealt a little bit.
Awesome.
Excellent.
And I agree with that too. Kyle and I agree on a lot of things. If anybody's interested in actually talking more with myself or with Kyle, they're always welcome to join the Comics Experience Creators Workshop, the online private forums where we talk about craft, we review scripts and art from one another, all kinds of great stuff. And Kyle has recently decided to join the group. He's got his own thread where members can ask him questions, and we actually have a thread specifically about Cal, where we talk about some of the behind the scenes process pretty much in real time and take questions about the book. It's a really cool thing, and Kyle, thank you very much for joining the workshop and being so giving of your time there. Other things we've got coming up from Comics Experience, starting April 10th, we've got our first ever Introduction to Animation Writing course by instructor Zach Atkinson, who is a professional animation TV writer, and he's also an exceptional teacher. That's starting April 10th. You can find out more on the website. Joey, what else we got? Anything else?
Well, there's C2E2. I know the three of us will be at C2E2 coming up. There are 5 Comics Experience panels. Is that correct?
There are 5 Comics Experience panels, and then I will be on 2 additional panels as well. There will be a blog up, if there's not already, there will be a blog up soon on the website talking about what all the panels are. But yeah, be very busy there.
And Kyle, you're going to be joining Andy on a couple of those panels.
Yeah, I'm on some of the panels. I also have a table in Artist Alley.
Fantastic.
And I think I'm on a couple DC panels as well.
And the best place to get more information about you and to track what's going on with you, is that through your Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter's probably the best place. Kyle D. Higgins.
And you can follow Andy on Twitter at Comic Experience, and I am at Joey G. And if you can take a break from making comics, you can go check out the Kickstarter I'm currently running for my original documentary, Beardo the Movie. That's over at beardothemovie.com. It's an original documentary on the World Beard Mustache Championships and the guys that compete for best facial hair in the world. If you have a question for Comics Experience, Make Comics Podcast, you can email info@comicsexperience.com and we will discuss it on the show. Maybe not with Kyle, unless we can rope him into coming back a couple other times, but Cal is in previews currently. You can pre-order issue number one and follow the series through Image. I think that about wraps it up. Thanks for joining us, Kyle, and until next time, keep making comics.